We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Should we do an edition of Why Y'all Mad?
I think we could, right? Yeah.
Your chance to win 8 o'clock hour prize, free month of martial arts at the Martial Arts Institute of Overland Park. How about that?
Yeah, my kids went there this summer, did a couple of classes over there learning the karate.
Yes. You can go kick some tail with a free month. How about that? That is our 8 o'clock hour prize just for listening. The next time you hear this.
Silvio.
Be caller number.
Let's go with caller number 8 today. Caller from Lamar number Jackson.
8 to 913-576-7610. And you can win a free month at the Martial Arts Institute of Overland Park.
Your kiddos will absolutely love it. And you teach them the karate or karate, however you want to say it. They'll love you for it. Good crowd going to work today, I see.
We tried karate for a little while.
How did that
didn't work for my son was like, "Why can't I learn all these moves? When I get to fight somebody?" It was like day one. Like he was like had no part of it.
Like, so he wanted to like
there's a build up. Like, no, when do you fight somebody?
When do you break the board?
Yeah. It was all of a sudden like, I think you have a different perception of what this thing is. This
so how long be the right did that speed last? For
you. Long enough to buy whatever the robe is called and then not wear it.
Don't they call that a Ginsu knife?
I don't believe so.
What's the robe called then?
I don't know. This is on you, Kramer.
Come on, Kramer. This is where you search. When we ask questions on the air, you have to go to Google.
This is what this is Google.
Yeah, this is
what is the karate robe called?
A dojo?
No, that's a gym. A Ginsu's a knife.
A Ginsu is a knife.
It's got a specific name.
I'm sure it does.
69306.
Of course it does.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
Well, say it.
I
spell it.
K-E-I-K-O-G-I.
Oh, I don't know. That's not what I was thinking of.
Someone else says a gi?
A G?
Yeah, G, that's that. There's another one for it.
That sounds right.
They call it a judo uniform, too.
A judo uniform?
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I like that one better.
But anyway, I wanted them to continue doing it, but the one was not patient.
Did your daughter continue it?
No. She was a little more into it, but not as much.
Not as much, huh?
And he just wanted to fight people.
He just wanted to fight people.
He's not a fighter, so it's not like he wants to just...
Well, it was legalized fighting.
It was kind of like, well, I don't want to learn this stuff. I just want to advance to the end.
He just
want to
be like Kramer going against kids with the white belt. Yeah. You know, like, not you, Kramer, but Cosmo.
I was going to say, like, what?
Let's do a little addition. Why y'all mad? It seems that any praise for Lamar Jackson is met with, what do you think about Mahomes?
Yeah, it does seem like that. Like Mike Florio tweeted, I hate to say this, Lamar Jackson greater than Patrick Mahomes. And somebody tweeted, Lamar is 0-2 against Mahomes. I think it's okay to praise another quarterback. It doesn't mean you're talking negatively about the other quarterback. And I don't think, quite honestly, Mahomes and Lamar Jackson go hand in hand. Like if you say Lamar Jackson's playing great right now, unlike when we do, like, who he talking about with Andy, it doesn't mean the converse is true for Patrick Mahomes. Lamar Jackson is playing at a stupid level right now, kind of like Patrick Mahomes did a season ago. He was playing at a stupid level right now. Lamar Jackson right now is playing the best quarterback in the NFL, and I don't think there's really, Josh, any debate for that. I don't think there's really anybody else out there who can make a case for playing as good as Lamar Jackson is playing right now. I mean, yesterday, the Ravens were 8-for-10 on third down when Lamar was in the game, and then they were 2-for-2 on fourth down because they went for it both times and picked it up both times. Four touchdowns and 50 or more rushing yards in two consecutive games. He's the first quarterback of all time to ever do that. He is now over 3,000 yards passing, 1,500 yards rushing in his first two seasons. That's the best ever. Nobody's ever done that before. He's 15-3 in 18 starts, the second best record through 18 starts since 1950, and his team's 11-0 when he rushes for 70 or more yards.
Yeah, Lamar's great.
He's playing at a level right now that is so crazy good It's ridiculous. And that's where Patrick was a season ago when Mahomes was airing the ball out and throwing the ball all over the yard. He was playing at a level that was stupid good, that was crazy, that nobody ever saw before. And Lamar Jackson kind of looked at Mahomes and goes, all right, I'll do one better, and I'll go out there and I'll run the football and throw the football and do it effectively. Like, I think they're completely different quarterbacks.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
right,
can we acknowledge it's just different? I don't even. I mean, and I'll knock Florio on this one. You give me that. Well, who? Why do we have to definitively say
you don't?
You don't, and you don't have to take one down. They're different quarterbacks.
They're different quarterbacks. Patrick Mahomes scrambles and makes plays happen. Lamar Jackson is more of a straight. Like, I don't think Lamar Jackson could run around and do what Patrick does and keep plays alive and ultimately find somebody downfield and sling that ball like Mahomes does. Like, those amazing plays
Silvio
that Mahomes has had where, you know, you hit Tyreek Hill against the Baltimore Ravens, where you find a guy in the back of the end
probably
zone against
the 49ers.
Probably
because he's going to be more prone to go downhill at that point in time and not wait for it.
Right, he's not going to wait for the play to develop. Yeah. I think Patrick is a more patient, more willing to allow the play to develop, and able to take advantage of anything that's given to him on the field. I think Lamar Jackson is really good in the pocket, and once he gets out of the pocket, he's not the playmaker that Patrick is with his arms. He's a playmaker with his legs, more so than Mahomes is, which it's fine. He can't do what Patrick can with his arm outside the pocket, throwing across his body, looking the other way, throwing left-handed, making the magical happen. Lamar does it different ways. I think they're different quarterbacks right now, and it doesn't mean that, you know, Lamar is better or Patrick is worse or Patrick is better and Lamar is worse. I think it's fair to say they are completely different quarterbacks that can beat you in different ways. And the strength of Patrick Mahomes, which is getting outside the pocket, allowing a play to develop, allowing his receivers to get open, and then finding the open receiver or throwing the receiver open, is completely different than what Lamar Jackson's strength is. And Lamar's strength is back in the pocket, firing a bullet down the field, or getting outside and running with the football. They've got two unique skill sets that are completely different, and it doesn't make one better than the rest. But right now, Lamar's playing at an MVP level. He's going to win the MVP if the season were to end today.
Now, I think your best approach is to make them play from behind.
Sure.
And not let them set the tone,
right,
which the Chiefs were good at for a while that aren't necessarily as good at now.
Yeah.
The old get teams to, because it's the knock in the matchup this year, right, was you got away from the game plan.
Right.
Right. Once the Chiefs pounce on with that big second quarter, the Ravens went away from kind of grounded, fully committing to the ground and pound, right?
Right.
The Chiefs haven't exactly been a strength in doing that, making teams come after them. If they can get back to that, then, yeah, that's one of your better recipes to get that team.
The Chiefs were at their best, Josh, when they were able to get up 14-0 on teams. And then you had to make teams change their game plan. Mm-hmm. And that's why you look at, you know, like, what are the Chiefs lacking this year? Like, what's the one thing? And I think, obviously, the ground game is key. But also, what we've missed this year is a 14-0 lead with 7 minutes to go in the first quarter.
The ability to run away and hide.
Yeah. They haven't had the ability and the opportunity to do that for whatever reason, whether it's teams, you know, scheming better against them, whether it's teams playing better defense, them not stopping the run so it allows teams to stay. Whatever the case may be, those 14-0 go away and hide type games really haven't been that prevalent since September for this team.
One of the big keys to getting there offensively, Andy Reid says, is
penalties. We've got to take care of those. It's affected us in the field. It's affected us in the red zone. We've got to make sure that we clean that up. And that's something that we can do. And it's probably a pretty obvious thing. The other things are smaller, and I'm not going to get into those, but if we could just take care of that, we'd be better off all the way around. You get a penalty in this league on a drive and cut your percentage of the opportunities to score way down. So you need to get rid of those.
Yep. That's on you. That's on coaching.
That's on coaching. Yes.
I know people sometimes debate that, well, it's a player's making mistakes. No, it's ultimately the teaching of it and the emphasizing it, that those things can happen and all those things. That comes on the practice field, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Those are things that are developed in practice habits and everything else to not be sloppy and to not give away penalties. And they've been a penalty riddled team over the last couple of years. So I don't know if you can just magically get that to stop, but they need to make that an emphasis. And if Andy's coming around to knowing it has to be an emphasis for this team to not shoot itself with penalties, mm-hmm, then that's a step in the positive direction. But again, I think that's on the coaching staff and that's on him.
I agree. I think penalties are a direct reflection of the head coach.
Also being more effective late in the games on offense.
Yeah, we've got to do a little bit better job collectively, whether it's the calls that I make or execution. Just when we run the ball, we've got to do a better job there. So, and be a little bit more productive. And so that, I mean, that would be the primary thing. When you have a lead, you're yeah, that helps keep the clock rolling, where you don't have to use quite as many short passing. You're short passing in quite as much, and you're able to keep a blend, a productive blend, you'd say. So,
I like that. It won't use balance. A productive blend.
Sounds like a wine. That's like something Vermeil told. We need a productive blend.
We need to come up with a productive blend. But he's talking about balance, right? Especially late in games, putting away games, putting away people by being able to showcase that you can run the football.
Correct.
All things that hopefully are being emphasized and they can get better at down the stretch because they're going to need it.
They're absolutely going to need it. And if you can't run the football effectively in December and January, it is hard to win football games.
John and Casey Kay gets the free month, the Martial Arts Institute of Overland Park. That was our 8 o'clock hour prize just for listening. Gives away at 7, 8, and 9 o'clock. It's the Chiefs story we all forgot. Next.
Fesco in the morning.
Chiefs back to the practice field today. Normally Tuesday, the players' day off, but after the bye week.
Well, they've had enough time off.
They've had enough time off. They didn't go in Monday. They're back on Tuesday. They will practice today through the remainder of the week. Andy back in the office yesterday, but the players were not, so they will arrive today.
Andy looked good and refreshed.
And have practice today. Yeah, he was talking about some like numbers guys they have now. The back in the day, they had to...
Yeah,
they had to do the numbers themselves, and now they have numbers guys, so they get an extra day off. Something like, we don't have to do as much now. You used to have to add stuff by hand, basically.
What was he talking about when he brought on like some metrics guy? And I'm like, they got a guy for that now?
Yeah, it was. He does the math now, so I don't have to. I got a couple extra days off.
Yeah, it was like something like coming off a bye week or something like that. Some kind of numbers thing. He's like, I got a guy for that now. It was funny the way
he was phrasing it. It's like, okay, I guess he's taking stuff off your plate, so that's cool.
Yeah. Go ahead. Good. I mean, and that's the way, look, that's the way effective leaders lead. They allow people that they hire to do their jobs, and they delegate. And they always say the higher you get in your field, the more money you make, the less work you really do, because you got everybody under you that's handling everything. And, you know, that's the way it always was for Dick Vermeil here in Kansas City. I think he did a really good job of trusting his coaching staff and allowing his coaching staff to do the work and, you know, do what they were supposed to do. And he was the CEO, and that's the way it should be. There's nothing wrong with getting help. I think coaches and leaders that fail ultimately fail because they don't allow their worker bees to work and
they
trust their worker bees
themselves.
And they try to do too much. Yeah, and you ultimately fail.
And Andy had problems with that. He realized in Philadelphia, to his credit, I don't need to do everything.
Right.
It's not effective for me, and it's not effective for most people.
It's not effective for anybody.
For most people to do that, but people try it. People try it every day.
Oh, yeah.
Time for the Chiefs story we all forgot.
We worked with a guy like that once. I'll start today.
He's no longer working.
No, it hasn't for years. Yeah,
hopefully,
yes. No.
Hopefully someday again.
I will say this. The chief story we all forgot is that this team is coming off a 4-interception performance of Philip Rivers. And my buddy Joe texts me, goes, my favorite quarterback to watch is Philip Rivers because I know when he plays, we're winning. And I said, that's
pretty good.
Okay,
I'll give you that.
I like that. That's really good.
I'll give you that.
He is right about that. But the 4-interception game against Philip Rivers is, I think, very significant for this pass defense. 12th in the NFL right now, at least after last week. I think is very important because it shows how good they're playing from a defensive back standpoint. And that continues into this game this weekend against the Oakland Raiders. Listen to this. Derek Carr has played multiple games in 12 stadiums in his NFL career for the Raiders.
Okay.
His 61.9 rating in 5 games at Arrowhead is by far his worst. His next lowest is at 75.4 at MetLife Stadium, where they were the other day and lost, and 80.1 at Wembley Stadium over in London. So Derek Carr, when he gets away from whatever toilet bowl that is out in Oakland.
They've played too many times there, is what you're saying.
But they played too many times in Oakland, in Wembley,
England,
in England, yeah. But what I'm saying is his worst games are at Arrowhead Stadium. A 61.9 rating in his 5 games at Arrowhead Stadium, by far his worst on the road. And I think that's a story we forgot. This defense, from a pass standpoint, is playing really good right now. Is it Super Bowl caliber? No, but it is trending that way right now. And I think if they continue to get better at the pass in a passing league, it's going to hopefully snowball and they'll be able to have some success in the run game because they'll play better up front. They'll be allowed to play eight in the box. They'll trust their defensive backs more in the passing game and they'll be able to do a better job at stopping the run. I think this week sets itself up perfectly for that pass defense to continue to grow and to continue to get better because of how bad Derek Carr truly is at Arrowhead Stadium. I didn't realize he is complete dog crap at Arrowhead Stadium.
Well, you remember earlier in the week he was worried about getting beat by 50, so...
Yeah.
He may have maybe a little bit mental for him too. Some rise to the occasion of coming to Arrowhead because it's nice and loud and fun to play in. Derek Carr might not be one of those
guys. That's right. He's not liking it, right?
Yeah, we better show up or they're going to beat us by 50, you know. They're a really good football team, one of the best in the NFL. So hopefully our guys, myself included, when we show up to Arrowhead, you know, a week from now, we're ready to go, and I believe that we will be.
Or they'll get beat by 50. I'll take the getting beat by 50 part. That'd be cool. My chief story, we all forgot. It was a long time ago, okay? It was early on this season, but we all kind of came out of that first Raider game feeling really good. Like, oh, my gosh, just crushed the Raiders. It was all one quarter. For three quarters, the Chiefs did absolutely nothing in the game. Now, granted, they had a big second quarter of this matchup, scoring 28 points. They had 287 yards of offense and four touchdowns in the second quarter.
That's pretty good.
Wow, really good. They had just 443 more yards after that point in time. As a total, they had 287 in the quarter and 474 for the game. So almost everything happened in that quarter. And it's not like they were salting away a lead or trying to salt away a lead. Like, we got 28 in the second quarter. Let's go out and run the football.
Right.
They had eight rushes in the first half, 14 in the second half. They ran for a total of 31 yards. 31 yards. So it wasn't even if they were playing with a big lead and then tried to run away a ball game by just running the football. They weren't even doing that. Got to do better than that. The one quarter was flashy, was great, it was high-flying. But that was an example of not being able to use your run game to put away a game and really not doing anything after that point in time. They had 18 rush yards in the second half.
That's wow.
130 yards passing, 18 yards rushing in the second half. And again, 287 of their 467 day came in the second quarter. They had one big quarter the first matchup against the Raiders. You got to do better than that.
You got to do better than a quarter.
Even if the Raiders are coming off this is one of those examples. I feel like that game we just went, oh, man, all was great. All was fine. All was awesome. Wow, did you see those big plays they had? Yeah, they were all in the second quarter. They did nothing for three other quarters.
Well, here's another stat that's going to make you feel better about Derek Carr and why they may only have to do well in one quarter. Derek Carr versus the Chiefs in Kansas City throws for 4.6 yards per attempt, three touchdowns, five interceptions. We mentioned the rating earlier. Versus the Chiefs in Oakland, 6.5 yards per attempt, two more yards per attempt, 11 touchdowns and six interceptions, a rating of 85.5. Derek Carr poops his pants when he comes to Arrowhead Stadium. The Chiefs are going to win this game going away because it's become a mental thing now for Derek Carr.
We finally found that one quarterback who truly loves to play at Arrowhead, but it's not good at it. As opposed to the reverse a lot of times.
That's right.
They love to play here, yeah, because they're just fine here.
Derek Carr is not good in Kansas City.
Keep doing what you're doing, D.C. Those are the chief stories we all forgot. The big story coming up, and the Art of War next.
Fesco in the morning.
Staff Hour brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967. It is okay to change an opinion. And one former coach does, kind of. Also, another discusses the Art of War. And what do you want to hear today at noon from the new Royals owner?
Is it worse to stick with an opinion that's clearly wrong, or is it worse to admit you're wrong and change the opinion?
I don't have a problem with admitting you're wrong and changing it, but that's just me.
I don't either.
Some people are wedded to them. Can't help them. Big story.
Everyone, I'm sorry for the delay, but the big moment has finally come.
It's the big story.
This may be the biggest thing that's ever happened.
If it's what you're talking about, it's what we're talking about.
My God, are you still talking?
On Fesco in the Morning.
Andrews comes in motion to the right. Jackson wants to throw. Fires across the middle. Touchdown, Hollywood Brown! And how fitting that Hollywood scores the first points in L.A.
Oh, very fitting. Ravens Radio Network.
No, Jerry Sandusky.
Fires, and it is caught. Touchdown, Willie Snead. And the Ravens with their fourth touchdown of the opening half.
Oh, my goodness. The Ravens on a roll last night. They thumped the Rams 45-6. Lamar Jackson throws for five touchdowns. Mark Ingram, a touchdown run and a touchdown catch and 111 yards on the ground. Ravens look pretty doggone unstoppable once again as they move to 9-2, dropping the Rams to just 6-5.
Well, and that's the thing, man. The big story, obviously, is what the Ravens were able to do. But I think the big story when it focuses on Kansas City a little bit has to be with the Los Angeles Rams and that the way that they've run their operation. This is why you can't have these all-in years where everybody wanted the Chiefs to risk everything and go for it all, because sometimes if you do that, you don't achieve greatness. And we're looking at a team in the Rams right now who was kind of all in last year, clearly went all in again this year, and they're not playing to that level that they need to be playing at. Sometimes you may not have the name players at your, let's call it, defensive back position, like there with Jalen Ramsey, because that's a guy that everybody in Kansas City wanted. The Rams aren't better since they acquired Jalen Ramsey. In fact, they're probably a worse defense since they acquired Jalen Ramsey and sent Marcus Peters to the Baltimore Ravens. I don't think they're a better team defensively. They sure weren't last night.
And Marcus Peters made sure he told Jalen Ramsey about it after the game last night.
Yes, he did.
That.
Yes, yeah. He did. They had a couple of kind words for each other after the game. And then you look at what the Los Angeles Rams have going forward with how much money they've got tied up in a bad quarterback. They have no first-round draft picks until 2022. They're aging with Todd Gurley and that bad contract right now. All of a sudden, that window a year ago that looked wide open in Los Angeles is slamming shut very, very fast. And I think when you're the Chiefs and you're looking at moving forward with this organization, you pay Patrick, you pay Chris Jones, and then after that, I'm not really paying anybody else on this roster, going forward. I think I can find guys. I think I can make players out of players, and ultimately,
make players out of players.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. Like chicken poop out of chicken scratch, or whatever the case may be. Chicken salad out of chicken poop. I'm not getting involved in these big time heavy contracts with players because ultimately they come back and bite you in the rear. And I think the Rams are going to be in salary cap hell for the next couple of years with some bad contracts they're involved in.
I don't think
they still haven't paid Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the Chiefs are in this position. You pay the wrong quarterback and you're in trouble.
You're screwed.
And Jared Goff got paid and got paid a lot, and they owe him a bunch of money, like $100 million of money over the next 3 years.
And it's really, for me, when I look at the paying of guys, you have to take the Dayton Moore approach and think about, if I give this guy money, will he continue to go out there and earn that money, or will he sit back and be fat and happy and just kind of roll around in his money like Scrooge McDuck? Those are the tough decisions. Those are the decisions that you make as a general manager, Josh, and I think ultimately save your job or cost you your job. Because if you pay the wrong guys because you read them wrong as people and they go out there and they live fat and happy like it looks like Jared Goff is doing right now, boy, you're out of work real fast. I don't think Patrick Mahomes is that guy. I don't think Lamar Jackson's going to be that guy. I don't think Russell Wilson has been that guy or Aaron Rodgers. But there are some guys out there that when you pay them, they take the foot off the gas, they sit back, they live high on the land, and they enjoy life. And I think Jared Goff is doing that right now
I don't
in Los
know.
Angeles. It sure seems like it.
There are rumors starting to surface that he's a partier and all those things. I don't know if those are true. I just think they paid him too early anyway.
I just don't think he's putting in the work.
I don't think that he gave them enough to show them that he was legit. And they went and paid him.
And they went and paid him. Like Carson Wentz, you're looking at that same issue with him right now. They maybe paid him a little bit too early as well. I think you got to be careful who you pay and when you pay him. And you got to make sure, if I give you this money, are you still going to go out there and be that same person that busted it to get here to earn that money? And if it's going to change you and it's going to change you as a person, I can't pay you.
Out of that 2016 draft class of quarterbacks, probably the best two are Prescott and Brissett. And you got Wentz and Goff in that same exact draft class. And they need to get paid.
The two that haven't gotten paid
are... Exactly.
Say the names again.
So Jacoby Brissett and Dak Prescott are the same draft class, and they haven't got paid yet, and they deserve to be paid.
Yeah. I think Jacoby does. Yeah. I don't know if I'm giving Jacoby $30 million, but...
No.
But, yeah, he gets a nice bump. I mean, I think he's been really good this year. Really good in a really tough situation. Like, I'm actually getting goosebumps talking about Jacoby Brissett because I respect that guy more than I respect a lot of people in sports with the way that he just came in and took that team and played. I really like Jacoby Brissett and the way that he's got about everything in Indianapolis this year. And, yeah, and Dak Prescott, man, he's the quarterback of the number one offense, allegedly, in Dallas right now. And, you know, everything in Texas is bigger and better. And so I'm sure they're going to, you know, roll out a boatload of cash
for
him,
too. But you better be sure about Dak.
And you better be sure about Dak, yeah.
You're going to have a big-time contract on your hands like the Rams appear to have with Jared Goff.
They're screwed. They are screwed. And you still haven't paid Jalen Ramsey. You have to pay Jalen Ramsey now. You got no choice. So you're going to be a 6-10 team with a good cornerback?
Oof.
Woo!
And that's, again, one of those reasons, too, that I mean,
that's why you can't put all your eggs into the basket.
That I appreciate Andy.
Yeah.
Now, you can say Rams got to Super. They did. They got to a Super Bowl. Probably a fun season last year, but it's like hit it and quit it. Like that flash in the pan type thing. I know Andy's not going to be – Andy's not that. Andy is consistent. Now, can you consistently get to a Super Bowl and win a couple? That would be the next step. Obviously, yes. But those –
he's pushing it.
Those teams that just don't hang around, though, like the Rams.
What would you rather do?
Like
have
the Jags.
Yeah.
The Jags were the next coming, too. They made it to the AFC Championship game.
Oh, the Jags.
Gone.
Saxonville, they called that place.
You better strike while you can, because stuff can be very, very fleeting, and it might be very fleeting already with the Rams.
Look, in the NFL, it's so hard. 50% of the teams change over every year into the postseason. It's a fact. 50% of the teams change over every year. And you better have yourself a stable organization. And look, I'll take Andy Reid flaming out in the playoffs every single year, knowing that I'm getting to the playoffs every year and I'm going to have a good product to watch and give you a shot.
He can break through at some point in time. And if you're Baltimore, maybe you have to hit it this year, too.
Maybe you do.
You don't know.
I mean, you got to capitalize. Maybe you look back at the Chiefs last year and say, damn, we missed that potential window. If you're Baltimore right now, you got to capitalize. Because that's what I said last year, is we're complaining about things and going through it and we're missing the big picture. You got to enjoy these seasons. You enjoyed 14. You enjoyed 15. You enjoyed 18 with the Chiefs. You're enjoying 19. You have to enjoy it because seasons like this don't happen. Ask Saxonville. Ask the Los Angeles Rams, nee St. Louis. Ask all these other teams that look like they were the next great spectacle of a franchise. And then, you know, 9 months later, they're dog crap.
I mean, the Ravens couldn't be hotter right now, so you feel like they need to take it.
They got to take advantage.
They might need to take advantage of this one as well.
The 49ers maybe need to take advantage of it, too.
Yeah.
That's another one right now that maybe needs to take advantage of it. Or the Minnesota Vikings maybe need to take advantage of where they're sitting at 8-3.
The Ravens looked doggone good, though, last night, and pretty much unstoppable once again. Danan Hughes, former Chief wide receiver, dropped by earlier in the show today. And his suggestion on how do you try to stop Lamar Jackson, say, if we met him in the playoffs.
I think you got to spy him and you make him throw the team the victory. And, I mean, you got to take away one strength. I mean, that's pretty much it. You're not going to be able to do everything to him. If you blitz him and you don't get to him and he escapes, he's going for 50-plus. So you have to have some speed on the field, obviously, but you got to spy him and just make him throw the ball. Have somebody that's going to be at the line of scrimmage that's quick enough to stay with him and, you know, roll the dice. Try to fool him a few times, get physical with the receivers, and so on.
And that might not work either because he's really good in the pocket. He's answered all those questions, has Lamar Jackson this year. Not just like a runner just to run, that can't throw and that's going to run. No, he's the best pocket passer in the NFL this year.
Statistically speaking, he's the best pocket passer in the NFL. And so for all the folks who say, well, this guy's not a pocket passer, he can't throw. No, he's the best in the NFL. And at one count in last night's game, and I stopped keeping track after like the third touchdown, he had 19 touchdowns this year and zero turnovers in the red zone. That's remarkable. You look at what the Chiefs are doing in the red zone this year, Josh. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. They're only converting like 50% inside the red zone when it comes to scoring touchdowns. The Baltimore Ravens are lighting the world on fire inside the 20-yard line. Just a blaze.
They're scary. They are really, really scary. And yesterday I was trying to find three losses for them to get the Chiefs tied with them somehow, some way, and get that two seed. Yeah, I was hoping one of them was last night. Clearly was not. I don't know that I see three losses from them.
No, I don't either. I think
they're not catching New England or Baltimore, and it's not – It's because of the hole they have dug and seemingly the freight train that, the Ravens are on right now. And I'm never counting. I'm not counting on the Patriots giving you a chance sitting with one loss right now, giving you a chance with four to catch them.
I think like going into last night's game, I thought they were going to win Baltimore. I didn't think they'd do what they did. I thought last night would be a close game and it would start, all right, well, San Francisco cannot. Like, Sunday afternoon is going to be fun. 49ers and Ravens.
That was one I had to shut off because I'm like, I can't do that.
You didn't also shut it off. Baltimore shut it off. They took Lamar Jackson out in the fourth quarter.
I was out before then is what I'm saying. I'm like, I've seen enough.
Halftime. Yeah.
This is scary. I've seen enough. Bill Belichick, we all want to pick his brain, right? Find out what makes it tick. Well, I guess you have to just go back a few hundred years.
You can go all the way back to a few hundred years BC. Sun Tzu, The Art of War. Attack weaknesses, utilize strengths, and figure out what the strengths are in your team. There's some things you have to protect. Find the weaknesses of your opponent and attack. You can't win a war by digging a hole. You got to attack. So you have to figure out where you want to attack, how you want to attack, and that changes week to week, game to game.
I don't understand why every coach in the NFL isn't already doing that, because they're clearly not. I mean, I've seen enough coaches now in the NFL to realize
that dig holes in Belichick ease.
They're not doing the simple things of attacking weaknesses and utilizing strengths. Like, it's so simple, and yet this is why it makes me mad with coaches in the NFL that they're putting in these 18, 20-hour days. Why? I can sit down and watch a game of any team, and at the conclusion of that game, I can pretty much tell you what their strengths and weaknesses are. It's not that hard. Like, if you're game planning against the Chiefs, run the football. That's how you attack their weakness. You attack their weakness by running the football. We all know they can't stop the run. And yet, idiot coach will come out.
That seemingly is their strength. Like, teams that have the
Chargers.
You got to make sure you're using your strength.
And they're throwing the football with Phillip Rivers, who can barely lift his arm above his waist. Like, I don't get that. And then utilize your strength. Well, if you're the Chargers, your strength is running the football. Let's go. Giddy up, baby. Let's run the football. And that's kind of the way I look at this game going in against the Raiders. If you're John Gruden and you're game planning for the Chiefs, your strength is running the football, right, Raider fan Kramer? Right? Josh Jacobs, pretty good. Pretty good football player, right? Pretty good. And you're also losing Hunter Renfrow now. You're not going to have a slot wide receiver. So you would think utilizing your strength as running the football and attacking their weakness, which is stopping the run, that needs to be goal number one. And I don't care if John Gruden believes that Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo are going to stuff the box and stop the run and do all of that kind of stuff. You go and you do it and you make them stop it. You don't allow them to dictate it to you. And that's the one thing that I just don't understand about football coaches. They get away from the basic lesson that Zeng Zhu, is that what the guy's name was? The Art of War taught Bill Belichick 200 years BC.
Feng Shui, I believe.
Feng Shui?
Yeah.
To attack weaknesses and utilize strengths. And that's the philosophy that Bill Belichick has coached on for the better part of 20 years, and why he is the most successful coach in the history of professional sports in America, because he's following an ancient Chinese philosophy of attack weakness and utilize strength.
Ancient Chinese secret, huh?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Like, if you're the Chiefs right now, What are you doing against the Raiders? What is the Raiders' weakness right now? Well, right now at Arrowhead, it's Derek Carr. I'm blitzing the hell out of Derek Carr. I'm making him look bad back there in the pocket. And then you utilize your strength. That's your offense, keeping the ball, allowing your offense to move the ball down the field, keeping your offense on the field, not going three and out and giving the ball back to the Raiders. Whether that has to be balanced attack with running the football, passing the football, mixing in a couple of, you know, screens or something like that, your strength, to utilize your strength for the Chiefs, is keeping your offense on the field and finding a way to do that. And if they can do that on Sunday, they'll win this football game. It's not that hard. It just isn't. They make it so hard.
Another head coach, Rex Ryan, appears on ESPN, and this was him from September 29th. Let's start with that. September 29th. Ripping Baker Mayfield.
I don't get it. I'd love to be an offensive coordinator here. If I have Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, Nick Chubb and this Baker Mayfield, yeah, I know he's overrated as hell.
And then remember that got the ire of Baker, sure. The ire of all Cleveland fans. He called him overrated as hell. This was Rex Ryan yesterday.
You got a quarterback that's underrated. I mean, Baker Mayfield's underrated.
As hell? Underrated as hell?
He really, so he's finally not. He's taking care of the football. He had the one bad interception yesterday. But yes, look, this is they've had the talent to win all these games. You know, but look, who's going to beat them? Pittsburgh with Ducky Hodges or some goose playing quarterback? I don't know. They got no chance. They're terrible. Then you're going to look at Cincinnati. I love how it was 82% chance to win. And then when they go to Cincinnati, because that is a gauntlet
place to play.
It goes to 71%. What? Are you kidding? Like, they can't beat anybody. So I think they got a chance. Like the schedule, I've never seen an easier schedule. Here's the thing.
That was okay. Rex Ryan kind of admitted he's like he was poking fun at himself.
Yeah,
he's had a quarterback that's underrated, and he was even had kind of a look on his face like, "Okay, watch this," because it's okay to change an opinion.
Yeah,
I think Rex, though, the first time was more frustrated. Like there are so many pieces on that Browns offense that he doesn't understand why they're not succeeding, and I think he could probably say now, well, the quarterback succeeds, the rest of this offense does succeed as well. But ultimately, it is okay to have an opinion change.
Oh, of course it is.
Rex Ryan, and kudos to you for kind of eating that one and going ahead and saying, hey, they're performing well now. I'm going to give the kid his due. Maybe it was a little bit harsh the first time, and you knew the reaction was going to be harsh, but I thought it was cool that he kind of came around to a different opinion. Like, I like the way they're playing now.
Yep.
Maybe the quarterback's playing underrated now.
Yeah, and he has been playing better over the last couple of weeks. There's no question about it. And me at, 6-10 for the Browns all season long, I still don't think they're a playoff team, but they are playing better football right now. They're taking advantage of the opponents on their schedule, and Baker Mayfield is doing a better job of not turning the ball over, getting it to Odell Beckham Jr. And it seems like the team in Cleveland for the last couple of weeks has actually, get this, Josh, focused on football a little bit and not all
the
nonsense
and distractions have not. Well, I mean, they did have the helmet thing, but
right. But that's
that didn't seem to derail them like some of these other stories have.
Right. Yeah. Like Baker, somebody doesn't like your tie. Well, I'm going to grow out a beard and I'm going to lose my mustache and I'm going to go nuts in the locker. Like, yeah, you're right. That hasn't derailed them. Like some of the stuff at the beginning of the season may have derailed them. And I think they finally figured it out to focus on the task at hand and not worry about what Rex Ryan was. I mean, Rex Ryan has been trolling them since September because Baker Mayfield said after that, if you're not wearing brown, it doesn't matter. And he came in the orange and brown suit the next time he was on TV and said this. Like, he's been trolling Baker Mayfield, and they've been buying in and biting on all of this, throughout the course of the season. And you really haven't heard much out of Cleveland with the whole kind of, battling everybody in sight. They seemingly have focused on football. And when you focus on football and not worry about the other stuff, that's when you have success, which is another reason why Andy is so good. He doesn't get caught up in all this nonsense and what people are saying and how people are going about their business. He goes out there and coaches. And if you can do that, that is a big-time feather in your cap. And I think Cleveland may have figured it out over the last couple of weeks.
We will hear from the new owner of the Royals for the first time today, coming up at noon live on 610 Sports Radio. John Sherman will be introduced today at Kauffman Stadium. Of course, the sale of the Royals approved by Major League Baseball owners last week. It's being finalized this week. He's making his first real appearance. Briefly spoke at the MLB owners meetings, but will full-scale chat today with reporters out of Kauffman Stadium. And again, live today, noon on 610 Sports Radio. Can I give a little advice on this one?
To me or to
just
everybody?
The general.
Yeah.
The general.
I'm always in for advice from the elderly.
If the only thing you want to hear is, I got an open checkbook and I'm spending all the money and I'm just buying baseball, you might want to just tune away for a little while. I think that would be the best advice to you. I mean, the biggest question I get involving the new owner is he going to spend a bunch of money?
Is that the only question you've gotten? Because that's the only question
I've really gotten. And downtown stadium.
Yeah.
The stadium might come up today. We'll see. I don't know if they're ready to reveal what seems to be the common notion is that there will be a downtown ballpark at some point in time. I don't know that he'd be ready to reveal that today, but he may give you his preference. I don't know. But the other thing is, I don't think he's going to go in and say, I want to have an open checkbook. And you know what? I just spent $1 billion on this team, but, I got some disposable income floating around that I need to go and do this, this, and this. I think there's going to be kind of a conservative approach, kind of stay the course a little bit. Here's what the building has been ongoing with the young players coming through, and I think it's going to be a lot of message about kind of staying where they're going. Now, if there's some new kind of life into this thing and some new ideas that you hear from John Sherman, great and fine. But if you're just, if you're solely focused on, you're going to spend a whole bunch more on payroll, you're going to find yourself disappointed today.
Yeah, but I think that is the biggest question that fans have, because ultimately, you know, when a new owner takes over a franchise, which is something we really haven't experienced in this town. I mean, the Hunt family has owned the Chiefs since day one, and David Glass is basically was an extension of Ewing Kaufman, and we knew that he saved baseball in Kansas City. I think when you have a new owner take over a franchise, and we don't have experience with that again, you want to know, number one, was he going to move the team? And number two, what are his plans for making this organization better as the new owner? And we obviously know John Sherman's commitment to Kansas City, so that's crossed off the ledger. Nobody has to worry about him, you know, taking the team elsewhere. But I think the next logical question is then, where is the payroll going to be? What's it going to be like? How is he going to run this organization? Is it going to be running the organization the same way and the prudent way that you have to run an organization in a market like Kansas City? Or is he going to go out and overspend and, you know, go broke himself trying to, you know, put together a baseball team? So that I think that, because what else does an owner really do, Josh? I mean, it gives you the opportunity to do your job in an effective way, right? That's essentially what an owner does, empowers you as an employee to do your job to the best of your ability.
Give you the resources possible.
Give you the resources necessary. So from a fan standpoint, like, I know people like, well, I want Mark Cuban and I want him sitting in the front row. Well, I don't know what that necessarily does. There are people,
and I think quite a few people that expect, I want you to exhaust every last cent to put into it.
He just spent a billion dollars. It's just not feasible.
You know, I love for him to come and say, you know what, we're going to spend like New York. I purchased this team in order to spend like the big market clubs. I don't expect him to say that.
No.
I think the realistic approach is, hey, this is what's been going on. This is the process that we've been building up with all these young players, generating some long-term players at the minor league level. We'll accentuate them. You tell me it will accentuate them with needed free agents at some point in time, and we will be evaluating that type of thing. I'm yes, good. That's exactly what I want. I would love to hear open check. You're not going to hear open checkbook, and nor should you. I think that having a smart approach to this whole thing, I think is the way that Kansas City has to operate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mark Cuban, he's not gone broke doing what he's done in that name. And he hasn't exhausted and spent every dime that he's ever earned and put it back directly into the Mavs, right? I mean, it's not a feasible plan.
Cuban, and how many championships has he won in Dallas?
What, one?
One, right? Off the top of my head, only won one.
I mean, Cuban has been an interesting follow.
Like 15 years ago now.
And an extremely fun, like, fan owner. I give you all that.
But does that really equate to winning?
It's not like he has, you know, gone over and above spending to exhaust himself of any money he ever made by putting it fully back in the team. That hasn't happened.
I mean, David Glass has more recent championships than Mark Cuban and Jerry Jones combined.
So, I mean, I'd like to see. Some new ideas would be great. I think his involvement in baseball is what's got me the most excited, that John Sherman is an experienced owner in baseball already. You know, some of the things he's learned from doing that in Cleveland, I'd like to hear more about.
Sure.
I guess I'm not just solely focused on how much you're going to spend. You know, but I think there are plenty of people that are, because I get asked the question every day.
You know what I think would be kind of cool to hear? What his experience is like wearing 14 and 15 sitting in the stands watching the Royals
win. Yeah.
Because I think anybody who is associated with the team, and that's all of us in this town, we want to get right back to that and saw what that was like. I was talking to somebody yesterday at the Jay about this, about 14 and 15 and what great memories they created with families and everything like that. Like, I think those memories are drive enough to get this organization and John Sherman back there sooner rather than later, because everybody wants to experience that again.
And did that propel him to want to buy it?
That's a good point. I never even thought about that. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Like, seeing that as... Did that ultimately think, okay.
Yeah, like, what if you don't win that championship and have that success? I mean,
does he even want to be?
Does
a part
he even
of
want it? And then does David Glass have to sell the team ultimately to somebody from out of town? And then it raises questions about the future.
Oh,
who knows?
I mean, maybe you want to buy a team anyway, but maybe something like that propels you to want to buy a team.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the why of it all, I think, would be interesting today. And then, yeah, philosophy-wise, what he's learned in baseball. He's a baseball guy.
Why do you want this team?
So, we'll hear it all today coming up at noon live here on 610 Sports Radio. Should be fun. The new owner of the Royals, John Sherman, will be introduced today.
I'm excited for it. I can't wait to get out there and meet him and find out, you know, what's next for this Royals organization. But again, I think it's going to be a lot of what we've seen before and a lot of support for Dayton Moore and the minor league development and everything that's going on right now and moving this thing forward and getting the Royals back to winning sooner rather than later.
Andy sees what we've seen. This Chiefs secondary is having a really good year.
Really, statistically, we're pretty good in the pass game part of it. And I've seen gradual improvement as we've gone. Better communication, better feeling for the defense. They're really playing. I mean, they're playing well together. And we've got plenty of room to get better. We'll keep working at it. But we got some young guys in there playing that are getting better. I mean, that's kind of the bottom line.
It's just great to hear, too. This was expected to be maybe the biggest weakness on defense for the Chiefs this year. Yes, they've had other issues, but the secondary has passed the eye test. It has passed the stat test, and Andy sees it as well. And Andy, who doesn't reveal a lot, as we all know, is praising the growth of the secondary this season.
And they have grown. That was my kind of Chiefs story we forgot. They have grown. I mean, they are 12th in the NFL right now in pass defense going into this past weekend's games. I think Charvarius Ward has emerged as a nice player for this team right now. I think, obviously, Tyrann Mathieu's coming on and playing good football and making plays. I think Daniel Sorensen is going to be a very key part to this defense down the stretch, both in the passing defense and in the run game. And I think with the way that the guys are playing defensively in that backfield, it enables you to commit more to stopping the run because you can trust your defensive backs one-on-one. You can put eight guys in the box and drop three if you want to try to stop that run. You can be aggressive with run blitzes in trying to stop that run because you know that you've got good defensive backs out there right now. So I think this is a big, big, big positive move in the right direction and one that we're not talking enough about. The defensive backs are playing well. And coming into the season, we all thought it was going to be a garbage position for the Chiefs. And changing the perspective and the opinion of everybody is very difficult to do because once you dig in and you have your opinion that the secondary isn't any good, to try to get you to change that opinion is going to take a lot. And I think, Josh, ultimately, they've offered a lot to change everybody's opinion on the secondary right now. They're close to being a top 10 pass defense.
I used to close my eyes every time the ball went up in the air.
You're not doing that anymore. Now you're closing it when they run the football.
Well, yeah, maybe a little bit so. At least there's like a squint to it, so I can't fully comprehend it. But every time the ball went up in the air last year, I assumed it was a big completion.
Yeah.
This year, I don't.
Nope.
And then the stats bear it out as well. Granted, teams have, you know, when they've done it right, they've run the football way too much against the Chiefs. But I do have much more trust in the secondary to play low coverage when teams, obviously quarterbacks are going to try to get numbers too, right?
Right.
I think that they have taken a major step forward this year, and Andy sounds like he is in that camp as well.
Right.
This half hour brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967. The rumors are happening again, but no go. Next.
Fesco in the morning.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.